Lottie.
Oh, my goodness. I have scared the girl nearly to death. I stand up quickly, my earring in my hand. I must have looked like some sort of wraith crawling around on the ground like that. I rush over to where she has fallen back against the side of the sofa. I'm embarrassed to have scared her so badly.
I'm sorry,
the young woman stammers. Wisps of shiny strawberry blonde hair frame her pale face. She looks absolutely stricken. She reaches one hand to the doorway for support, and for a moment, I think she is about to faint. Concerned, I hold my hand out to her shoulder, ready to try to help. I'm not a large woman, but I think I could probably support her weight if need be. I didn't mean to frighten you. Just drop this. I hold up my earring to show her. It's one of a pair of green stones given to me years ago by my daughter, Molly. I wear them whenever I need a little bit of good luck, and I know I'm going to need all I can get this week. The woman smiles back at me shakily, her hand still clutching her shirt near her heart.
I'm sorry, I just get easily startled. Thank you for helping me up,
she says, choking out a laugh.
You wouldn't happen to know how to get to the dining room.
She gives me a strange look, and I can see she is confused by my presence. I must have gotten turned around, too, I tell her. But I think I have my bearings now. I smile to reassure her, feeling motherly. If I had to guess, I'd say she's probably in her early 30s. Though I am terrible at guessing people's ages. Give me someone between 25 and 45, and I would be hard-pressed to give a remotely good answer. Nearly everyone looks young when you're my age.
I don't know how I got so lost.
She still looks rattled. I try to make her feel better. Well, it's not surprising, given how big this place is. I seem to have the hang of it, though. If you want, I can show you the dining room. I should be getting there myself.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
She smiles gratefully, the color returning to her cheeks, which flush a dark pink. She's quite pretty when she smiles, I notice. I want to convince her I'm not an old loon. So I try to strike up a conversation. I'm Lottie. You must be another baker.
Yes, I am.
She puts her hand out toward me.
I'm Stella, and I really am so excited to be here, even if I don't seem it.
I take her hand in mine, shaking it. It is cold and clammy. Lovely to meet you, Stella. Gently, I lead her back the way I came, out onto the main landing. Far overhead, the ceiling is crisscrossed with carved wooden beams, giving it the feel of a medieval church. A wide central staircase cascades down to the main floor, its wood banister curving elegantly to meet the flagstone of the foyer. Tall windows flanking the main door show a view of the tent, its white peaks set up in the hollow between the house's two main wings, which jut forward on each side.
It really is stunning here, isn't it? Stella breathes.
I nod in agreement, feeling a bit uneasy as we approach two menacing suits of armor guarding the front entrance. I agree. It's absolutely unforgettable.
So, Betsy Martin lives in that part of the manor?
Stella asks, pointing up to the left side of the landing where the larger staircase splits into two. That's what I hear, I say, trying to remember what I've read online about Betsy Martin's personal life. I guess she wanted her own space during filming. She probably doesn't need the entire place to herself. The stairs to the left are to her private quarters. It's called the East Wing, I think. As we descend the staircase, I get a prickle on the back of my neck and have the strangest feeling that we are already being filmed. But of course, that's not the case. I don't share my suspicion with Stella, who already had enough of a scare for one evening. I watch as her eyes dart around, taking everything in.
I kind of can't believe I'm here, she muses. Betsy is a hero of mine, my only hero these days. I've had one of Betsy's cookbooks since I was a kid, The Pleasure of Dessert. It was my favorite book growing up. I mean, what little girl loves a cookbook? But there was something so special about it, and it was all because of Betsy. Sorry, I must sound so annoying, like such a fangirl.
I watch her amused. Her face is still flushed, but I'm relieved to see that her anxiety seems to have given way to excitement.
Not at all. I brush her concerns away and try to match her enthusiasm.
She's an institution, really, isn't she?
Stella nods vigorously. She leans in to confide to me.
She's a comforting figure to me. Whenever I read one of her books or watch Bake Week, I just feel so calm, like the world is a good place and nothing can harm me, you know?
She turns toward me, her eyes searching, and I realize suddenly that Stella is someone who is unmothered. An ache of recognition forms in my chest. I pat her affectionately on the shoulder.
Shall we continue on to dinner? I ask softly. The others are probably waiting.
Stella shakes her head as though to reset it.
Oh, yes, please. Look at me jibber-jabbering away about Betsy Martin and making us late to meet her in the process.
It's just down here, I think. I guide her through an archway off the foyer and down a short hall. This part of the manor is welcoming and warmly lit compared to where we were upstairs. I tentatively approach a tall set of polished wood doors. I can already hear the pleasant buzz of voices behind them.
I never, ever would have found my way here, Lottie. Thank you.
Are you ready? I believe this is the dining room, I say, feeling like a tour guide. Stella looks at me, her eyes wide. Here we go. We each take one of the brass handles and push the doors open. A massive chandelier casts a festive glow above a long table where five people are already drinking wine and chatting. They look up at us as we enter, their faces bright and a bit trepidatious, like children on the first day of school. There are already several open bottles of wine and the remnants of some bread and cheese on a platter. At the head of the table, I recognize with a sudden lurch in my stomach, is the queen of baking herself, Betsy Martin. I feel Stella's hand squeezing my shoulder.
Welcome. Come join us,
Betsy commands, smiling regally. She gestures to the empty seats. She looks, in a word, wealthy. Swathed in a light pink cashmere sweater, her earlobes punctuated with pearls, she has the kind of glow that, at our age, comes only with very subtle, very expensive plastic surgery. I have to say I was surprised to read she'd be joining us for dinner tonight. I'd always assumed she kept a professional distance between herself and the contestants. A handsome man stands up, pulling out the chair next to him. I hesitate and look to Stella, who gestures for me to take a seat. I watch her sink into the chair across the table from me next to a very pretty and exceptionally young woman with white blonde hair cut in a straight line above her shoulders. The man next to me picks up a bottle of wine, tipping it toward my glass and raising his brows.
Just a very small glass, I say.
He fills my wine glass up over halfway, then brings the bottle back to his own glass, filling it nearly to the brim. He passes a tray in my direction.
You have to try this cracker. It's divine.
I take one and set it on my plate.
I'll have one of those.
A man in a plaid shirt calls from across the table, sliding several onto his palm. I hear that Betsy made them herself.
I'm Peter, by the way.
Pradumna, the man next to me says.
I think I saw you out front earlier. Did you bring the BMW?
Peter says, munching on a cracker.
Ridiculous car, I know.
Pradumna laughs modestly.
Beautiful car, Peter says, shaking his head appreciatively.
I catch Stella taking a long gulp of white wine. Pradumna turns toward me, hooking a lanky arm around the top of his chair.
And what was your name?
I'm Lottie, I say, feeling a bit flushed.
So, what do you do when you aren't baking, Lottie?
It's been a long time since a handsome young man has taken such a keen interest in me. For a moment, I almost feel like it's a line and he's trying to pick me up. Sometimes I forget my age.
It's a blessing and a curse, I suppose, to not feel my 72 years. Back when I was young, I remember thinking older people were practically a different species. Now I realize we are always the same inside. It's just the packaging that changes. I was a nurse, but I'm long retired now, I say. I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with all the attention directed at me, so I deflect by turning the questions back on him. If there is one thing I know to be true, it is that men love answering questions about themselves. And what brought you to baking? Or was it something you've always done? A small frown forms on his face, and he looks down into his wine. Well, I don't know, really. I suppose I wanted to impress women. I let out a surprised laugh. He smiles impishly, pleased with himself. No, seriously, I just think it's quite fun. Takes my mind off things. Takes up time. I wonder how the life of someone so young should be so empty that it needs time taken up. But before I can dig any deeper, the dining room doors open and a man rushes in. He's wearing a cream-colored linen suit, wrinkled from a day's travel. He drags his suitcase noisily behind him. Coming to a momentary pause, he pulls a handkerchief out of his pocket and mops his brow, then carries on, making a beeline for the table. He comes to a sudden stop at the far end of the dining table. "Hello, everyone. I'm Gerald." He addresses us, but his eyes focus only on Betsy. He gives a small melodramatic bow in her direction. "I'm mortified that I'm late. It was the trains, you see. The schedules were inaccurate." His voice rises as he says this last part. Across from me, Peter's eyebrows go up.
"Don't worry, Gerald," Betsy says graciously. "Now you are here, and we are delighted you made it. Please, have a seat. A glass of wine. We've only just gotten started."
Gerald props his bags against the far wall and chooses one of two remaining empty chairs, sliding in next to Hannah. She wrinkles her tiny nose as he settles into his seat, wiping a bit of remaining sweat from his brow. The others introduce themselves to Gerald, who still looks a bit shaken and can surely tell by their empty glasses and crumb-strewn plates that they have not just gotten started. There is a sound of glass being dinged with a fork at the head of the table. Betsy stands up and raises her wine glass. The etched crystal catches the light from the chandelier, and it twinkles like a gemstone in her hand.
"Bakers, if I could have your attention for just a moment."
The chatter around the table ceases instantly, heads whipping to watch Betsy. My heart thuds against my ribcage. She beams down at us. Betsy is the only other person at the table as old as I am. Older, in fact, by just 1 year. However, unlike me, an anonymous gray-haired woman, Betsy has made a name for herself as the absolute authority on baking. America's grandmother, they often call her in the press. She's made herself rich enough from her tarts and cookies to own and operate Grafton, the manor house she grew up in, and probably a few other homes as well. She is an icon, the Julia Child of home baking. When my daughter Molly was a little girl, we'd watch her show in the evenings after I picked her up from daycare. It was part of the reason Molly got so interested in cooking.
"Can we bake a cake, Mommy?"
she'd ask. It was hard to say no. We had so little then, and I barely kept us afloat with the money from my job at the hospital. But with only flour, sugar, butter, and cocoa, we could be happy. What was a little mess? A bit too much sugar. Behind the table, the doors open once more, and Archie Morris swaggers in. I feel a sharp intake of breath from the rest of the contestants as Bake Week's new co-host makes his way to the table. Archie Morris has a reputation as a bit of a bulldog.
Not him, Molly had said when I'd found out he was joining as co-host.
He even looks the part. He is shorter than he appears on television, but solidly built. His face is young and full for his reported 53 years. His head covered in thick auburn hair that curls in gravity-defying loops straight up from his forehead and around his ears. His smartly cut suit skims his muscular arms and pecs and almost succeeds in hiding the slight curve of a belly under his shirt. His skin glows with a deep tan.
Hey, team, aren't you all looking smart? How's everyone feeling? I, for one, am thrilled to be here hosting Bake Week.
He smiles at us, flashing a row of teeth so artificially white and straight they are almost blinding. He doesn't look like the sort of person who has spent his career eating decadent meals and desserts, and certainly not toiling over dough. He moves confidently to the chair at the foot of the table, unbuttoning his jacket as he sits.
Pass me one of those, would you? I'm famished.
He points at the cracker plate, and Gerald hands it to him, his mouth set in a firm line of displeasure.
Great, thanks, Archie says, taking a noisy bite and giving the rest of us a little salute with the rest of the cracker.
Now that we're all here, Betsy begins again, resting our attention back to the head of the table.
I notice more than a hint of disapproval in her voice.
I'd like to give a toast. It is an honor to have six of the country's finest amateur bakers in my home for the 10th season of Bake Week. As you may know, it is customary for me to join you all for dinner on the first night, not as a judge, but as a host. It's a tradition I relish. You all have probably heard that baking came to me early, passed down from the many talented women in my family, as I'm sure is the case for many of you. What you may not realize is that it was in this very home's kitchen that I shaped my first loaf of bread. Betsy pauses and looks around the table at us as we smile appreciatively. I'm sure we are all happy to be here, but it also feels a bit like a competition already, like we are all vying to be noticed by her. I wonder whether she is actually judging us based on tonight. She's certainly deciding which of us she likes, who is going to be easy to get along with, who's going to be difficult, and who's going to flame out. I press my lips into what I hope is my most genuine-looking smile as she continues. Grafton Manor is a special place for me. It is my ancestral home, and I hope during your spare time this week you'll take some time to appreciate it and the beautiful grounds it sits on. As you all know, Bake Week is not just a competition. It is also a therapy session, a comfort for those at home. You all have been chosen not only for your exceptional baking techniques, but for your unique stories. This is a transformational journey for you bakers in the tent. You may learn things about yourself along the way, so be prepared to accept these discoveries, to learn and grow from them. That said, I will be judging this competition for baking and baking alone. As you all know, I am deathly allergic to burnt crusts and doughy centers. So, let's drink up and enjoy the beautiful meal the staff here have created. Tomorrow, I take a big step back and resume my role as judge, and you will begin the very important business of baking in the tent for all to see. Hats off to you all for making it here, and may the best baker win.
I notice several pairs of eyes glowing wetly as we stand. I pick up my glass and lean in to join them. A chorus of cheers breaks out around the table, and I clink with as many glasses as possible.
To Bake Week, Betsy says. To Bake Week, we shout in unison.
I wonder if anyone can tell my hand is shaking.